They, we did have cake, and they said happy birthday to me, but I spent my birthday here. So funny, my dad.
Seven minutes and 30 seconds. Thanks. I'd like to welcome everyone to the City Council meeting for March 6, 2024. I'm Mayor Horrocks. I'd like to announce that Council Member Ted Knowlton is traveling and not with us. And Council Member Baskin is convalescing at home, and she may rejoin us on Zoom. Our first item is our thought, and we have a special treat with us, and so I'll turn it over to Council Member Van Langeveld.
Thank you. Today we'll start first with the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand with me to repeat the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, it is my absolute honor to welcome the Orchard Elementary School Martin Luther King Jr. speech winners this year. They have been invited to council meeting tonight to share their speeches with us and for us to recognize and congratulate them. So we'll start with Isaac Cyril, who is a sixth grader at Orchard Elementary right now and getting ready to start seventh grade next year at South Davis Elementary. Isaac, please come forward. Oh, South Davis Junior High.
This is our hope. This is the faith that I will go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountains of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning. My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. So let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that. Let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And when this happens, and when we let freedom ring from every village and every hamlet, in every state, and every city, we will be able to speed up that day. And when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual. Free at last. Free at last. Thank God Almighty. We are free at last.
Thank you. That was incredible. And as some more context for the rest of the audience, the Martin Luther King Jr. Speech Contest is open for students to select their own choice of which of his speeches they would like to then memorize and present, which is incredible. One thing I heard from some of the schools this year is that they were so impressed at the breadth of the speeches that were selected, that it wasn't the most well-known, and it really kind of dug into a lot of messages that we need to hear today and aren't hearing over and over again. Thank you, Isaac. That was fantastic. All right, I'd now like to welcome Lexi Marshall. Lexi is the winner from the fourth grade at Orchard Elementary School, and she will come forward and share her speech.
I have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, that the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that my four little children will not be judged by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, right down in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will join hands with little white boys and white girls as brothers and sisters. I have a dream today.
Thank you. That was fantastic. Before you leave, we'd love for you to get a picture with the mayor, if we can come forward.
Isaac, before you leave, can I just say something? That was very impressive, both of you. And, you know, you always have to admire someone that has a vision for the world and sees it as what it could be instead of what it was or is. And so that's something that we can all admire. I want to plant a seed to Lexi and Isaac. In a few years, you want to come back and be part of our Youth City Council. And it's a great organization with great kids, and you learn a lot and have a lot of experiences. And it's a great, just a great opportunity to give back to your community. So I'm planting that seed. Expect to see you back in 4 or 5 years and be on our Youth City Council. We need great leaders like you two. And thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Next item on our agenda is citizen comment. So if you have something you'd like to address the council, please come forward, state your name and address, and we'll consider what you're saying.
And you'll consider it. My name is Camille Thorpe, 80 North Main, a member of Parks and Arts Board, and wanting to invite you all personally to the event tomorrow night. But first of all, I wanted to say the North Salt Lake Winter Lights was a good idea, and we all had a nudge that we should do it. And I just wanted to say thank you for supporting that, and also thank you for supporting North Salt Lake Reads. Tomorrow is our event with the authors. Tomorrow we'll have two student assemblies, one at Orchard and one at Wasatch Peak. And I just thought it was ironic that the date tomorrow is 3-7, and our other largest event is 7-3. But I wanted to remind you that these events are not opposites. These are good indicators that we are doing the right thing and that we're providing a lot of good opportunities to our neighbors and citizens. So tomorrow we also have the winners to announce for the essay and the writing contest, and so you'll come there. Our authors tomorrow are Chad Morris and Shelley Brown, and so it's going to be a great night. Please come if you haven't tried the virtual reality. One of their books is Mustaches for Maddie. So if you see Mustache Station right here, Wendy, I hope we can use that table. You'll see Kyle Poulter there with his mustache, and you'll understand why he was assigned that job. And then one of the other books is Virtually Me, and that's why you'll see the virtual reality booth on both of these televisions and having some fun trying out virtual reality. So please come for that. Let's see. And thank you to Linda Horrocks for the social, truly. So that's my last plug. Thank you all.
Thank you, Camille. Thank you for all your work.
Oh, I was going to say, the author part starts at 7, but we're going to start right at 6:30 with the virtual reality just to keep that going on, and then we'll take a break during the winning presentation and the author presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Dee? Come on down.
I'll get there. Dee Lawless. A couple of weeks ago, there was a discussion that the state is probably going to mandate that we need to do recycling of whatever and put the blue barrels on everybody. I've talked to a lot of elderly people and those who are on fixed income who have not had a big increase in pay like the other inflationary things that have happened. And I would like to propose that you as a council have the trash removal, whoever company that we will be dealing with, that they come up with a structured type of a pickups. It's very easy to put on every garbage can a number that can be read. It's very easy for them to put that in their vehicles to read those and say, all right, this one I picked up. But like we have done on the water, I think that it would be well to come up with a structure that says this is the grid cost, so that if you're everybody would have to pay, say, $2 a week, $8 a month, or something like that. And then they would pay so much a can pickup. I've mentioned before that my garbage can, I think paying $8 or $9 for an empty can just to pick up about 2 or 3 inches in the bottom of it, and my stuff is not smelly or whatever. I recycle all my others. I've talked to a few people that say, oh, my garbage can is full every week because I put all my cardboard in it. I don't order things off of Amazon or the internet, and so I don't have a lot of cardboard. And my 3 or 4 cartons that come off of the cereal doesn't take up very much room at a time. My 2 or 3 centers out of a toilet paper or out of a paper towel roll, they don't take up very much either. And my 3 milk cartons a week, I'm sure that if you took what I put in there and divided that into what I pay each month for the removal, that it would be about $5 a pound, which is an awfully lot to be paying for picking up of very little. And so I would propose that you have the companies give a bid based upon what it costs to come around, whether it's $1 a week for each can or $2 a week for each can, whatever it happens to be, so that those elderly people and people who are on fixed income that can't afford to have that extra $10 or $15 every month, it would give them an opportunity to recycle. It would come out of their garbage can probably and go into recycle rather than all of it together. But it would it would satisfy the need that we have to think about our fixed income people. And I think that it would be very easy to do that. And since you're talking about utility things in a few minutes, I thought this would be a good time to think about that kind of utility. And maybe we could have, rather than mandated pick up everybody on their recycle, that you could have a can someplace on a street or whatever that they could walk down and put their one milk carton in a week or whatever. The other thing I had a question of, a year or two ago, there was a company that proposed glass recycling, that everybody that wanted to be in on it could have a little can. I have not heard anything whether that is going, whether it's making money off of it, or whether it's serving its purpose. And I think it would be well to report, or have someone report, on just how that recycling is going. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I think last meeting, on my mayor report, when I reported on this, I had that suggestion that we have some kind of a hardship policy in place for those that are severely impacted here. Just a little background, our second landfill options are both over 100 miles away, and so the costs associated with that coming are very high. And so this is an attempt to get another 10 years out of our local landfill before we have to incur those. I also wanted to mention, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Ace Recycling, or Ace Disposal, who we're using right now, they have a policy in place where they'll actually go grab their cans and bring them to the curb and dump them if they're not capable of getting a garbage can on the street. And so that's a great service. We're also aren't we in the final year of our contract there with Ace?
We are. In fact, we'll bring that to the council. It would be time for us to either renew the contract with Ace or solicit, do an RFP for new haulers.
And I think that should result in some possible cost savings.
It may.
Because of, anyway, thank you so much for that. And please.
Thank you, Dee, for that. I just wanted to report for myself. We pay for glass recycling, and it's working well, and they come once a month, and we definitely don't fill up our can. And so we've actually banded together with a couple of neighbors, and I have the can at my house, but I'll put it out, and they all know that it's there and available, and we've split the cost for it, and then they can all bring it over when it's recycling day, which might be another way to alleviate some of that concern. If you're not filling up a whole can, one or every other house could cancel their service entirely and share one garbage can. Just as another strategy.
If we could do that, that would be great. But the way it is right now, every house is forced to have their own can, and they have to pay for that can, whether they use it or not. And I just think that we are having a few people that really use it that should be paying more, and those who use it less should be paying less. I just think that some of our older folks were being taxed out of our homes. We've been taxed out of being able to live. And I think that when somebody turns 65, the government says you're worthless, let's get rid of you.
You're not worthless. I'm glad you're coming.
All right. Anyone else to address? Okay, moving on.
Mayor?
Oh, please.
If I still have 10 seconds, I forgot to give you the flyer for the schools.
Okay. Okay, our next item is consideration of a concept plan for triplets on Main PUD at 391 North Main Street. Sherry?
Oh, one slide.
Hold on just a second. We've lost lights out in our...
They turn off when people
so
are
someone
walking
comes in, they'll go on
through.
On.
Yeah.
I've just never seen them go off that quickly.
Usually, Tuesday nights are usually different than Wednesday.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Sherry.
Okay, great. So tonight we have a kind of a unique situation. As you know, we just recently changed our subdivision ordinance to change the process. We had an application come in for concept plan approval that was a complete application before the effective date of our subdivision ordinance. So this subdivision has to be processed under the ordinances that were in place at the date of the complete application. And so that's why you're seeing concept plan tonight. In the new process, you would not see that. It would only go to Planning Commission at preliminary, but that's why we're here before you tonight, even though you know we just recently changed the subdivision ordinance. So just a little bit of background on this property at 391 North Main. There's an existing home on this. This is the old, I believe that's their name was Howard, for Mayor Horrocks and possibly Council Member Langefeld. Remember, in 2017, we had a subdivision approved on this property. It was called Romaine Court, and it was for a townhome development and had 10 dwelling units in it. Shortly after getting final plat approval, the developer sold it to the current owner, who did not post a bond or record the final subdivision plat. And so that plat and approval expired. And he's just sat on the property and rented the home in the meantime. So he approached us last November, December, kind of inquiring on what he could do. And I explained to him there'd been some changes to the ordinance before the last changes in 2020 that changed how we calculated the density in these developments, the PUDs in the R17 and the RM7 and the RM20 zone. So what it did was change that you had to subtract out the infrastructure or the road that you put in, and then you calculated the density that was permitted on the net acreage, not on the whole acreage. So this is a 1 acre parcel, and in the R17 zone, it used to have a different standard for 7,000 square foot for the first unit and then additional 3,000 square feet for every additional unit, which is how they got to 10. Under the existing code, the maximum density is 8 dwelling units per acre. And because when we subtract out the street, they basically are entitled to a density of 7 dwelling units per acre. The other change that was made is that you had to, in a PUD, you could only have the residential housing type that is permitted in the underlying zone, for which in the R17 is duplexes and twin homes. In the previous ordinance, in a PUD, they could get townhomes, which is why they had three-story townhomes, and they had 10 of them previously approved, but now they can only get 7 dwelling units, and so that's what's before you tonight. So let me just show you the plat that they are proposing. They are proposing to build three buildings that have 2 dwelling units in them each, so those are twin homes. They'll be 2 stories tall, and then 1 single-family dwelling. 6 of the units will obtain access from this new private street that's a 20-foot street that is allowed under the previous PUD ordinance. And then the 1 single-family home will acquire access from Main Street. Let me just kind of go over some of the basics of this property. So again, the net acreage is 0.87 acres, which allows the 7 dwelling units per acre. They are proposing to have 2 car garages, and each one of the driveways can fit 2 cars. So the proposed parking is four parking spaces per dwelling unit. Our minimum standard is 2 spaces and a quarter space for each unit for guest parking. So they exceed the minimum standard for the zoning. They are proposing to have the common area will take up about 49% of the open space, and that includes the driveways and the little backyards that each one of these units will have, plus the larger community areas that will contain the detention and some sort of amenity that they haven't determined what that amenity will be. As part of the PUD standards in the previous section, 10.7.4, it provides that the Planning Commission can determine what the minimum standards are for this type of development, specifically the lot area, the width, the yard height, or the yard, the height of the structures, and then the building coverage. And then they can also approve variances in other standards. So I've provided a table in your staff report that shows what they are asking for in relationship to the standard. They're asking for a reduction in the standard road right-of-way and the measure of asphalt to be from 50 feet road right-of-way with 27 feet of asphalt to a 20-foot asphalt road. It has about a 27-foot right-of-way, but it would be a private street. The lot size minimum is 7,000 square feet. The lot size for each of these units will be approximately 1,320 square feet. That's the footprint, because these are going to be for sale units. So they will sell these to individuals to own, much like a townhouse, but it's just in a twin home format. The front setback off of Main Street would be 25 feet in the zone. They are requesting 20 feet, and that would be for this one twin home that you see. The single family home does meet the minimum 25 feet, just this side entrance or side street of the twin home there in the lower right hand corner. There, the front setback for these units off the private street is proposed to be 18 feet. The side setbacks for the zone are 8 and 12 feet, so in a combination of 20 feet. They are proposing they'll meet those standards on this south property line at 8 feet from the rear of, at more than 8 feet from the rear of the home, and then they're more than 12 feet from the side on the single family dwelling at the top. And then the rear setback, the side that's adjacent to I-15, the minimum standard would be 25 feet, and they're asking for 15 feet perimeter setback on that one. One of the things that they are, that we discussed at Planning Commission, was the maximum lawn area. So in our new ordinance about water efficient landscaping, it says that 25% of the lot, or maximum of 6,500 square feet, may be sod or lawn. It also leaves a caveat for the Planning Commission to modify that for multifamily developments. And so after much discussion with the developer and the Planning Commission is recommending that they not exceed a maximum sod area of 13,000 square feet. This will provide them the opportunity to put in a recreational amenity for the tenants there in that northeast, northwest corner. They haven't determined what that would be. They thought maybe they might do a pickleball court, they could do a barbecue area, a basketball court that would be used, or some sort of a tot lot. But they wanted to understand what the Planning Commission would allow them to have in sod, and then they would design around that parameter. And then again, the parking is proposed to be actually exceed our standard. So a couple of things that the DRC recommended to the Planning Commission. The first one had to do with garbage cans. And as we've worked with the garbage and the recycling pickup on some of these developments, a lot of them have pulled their cans, they pull their cans out onto Main Street or to the main road that's adjacent to it, and it lines the street every garbage day. So we've asked them to place next to the street, on the private street, build an area that's just big enough for the trash cans, so that the idea would be that the garbage truck would come in, turn around at the hammerhead turnaround, and on the way out of the development would pick up all the trash and recycling cans, and they wouldn't have to be out on Main Street at all. And so they've agreed to, the developers agreed to do that. And then they were concerned, the DRC was also concerned about the ends of the hammerhead turnarounds. They have on this furthest west one, they had some landscaping there, and they wanted to make sure that they provided snow easements so that when the developer's HOA is pushing their snow, they have a place for it to be stacked rather than push it out onto the public street on Main Street. Well, let's see if there's anything else. Again, the process will be, it will be processed under the old standards, so concept plan comes before the Planning Commission and City Council, and then preliminary and final plan as well will come before the City Council. They will be, they can be combined if they do their preliminary and final construction drawings. If they get them completed, they can actually process those two at the same time. So they may only have one more meeting with the Planning Commission and one with the City Council if they get all of their engineering in, which, because this is a small project, should not be a problem. But the Planning Commission did make a favorable recommendation to the City Council for this concept plan with those four conditions, being the garbage can placement area, the snow storage area, that the private street have no on-street parking and be permanently posted as such. That's a requirement of the fire marshal, and that the maximum lawn or sod on the property be no more than 13,000 square feet.
Thank you. Any questions?
I have some questions. Some of them are conceptual and some of them are really concrete. But first, conceptually, I like code, and I like that we have well-structured our code. And so when developments come in and say, we don't think your code is sufficient for our needs, I want to know why. Why do they want any accommodations? Why can this project not be built within the existing code? Do you know?
So we've provided in our code for what's called a PUD subdivision, just like this, where those standards are varied in exchange for creating more open space that can be used in common for better amenities for the community or shared amenities, and it kind of helps address other missing middle housing pieces. So this is really going to be something that's more affordable compared to the townhome units that we've seen that are three stories and more exclusive. So that's what they're hoping to achieve with this.
So the decision then for the City Council, who has already reviewed and thinks code is a great idea, would be, we are okay to not require you to build this up to code because we value more affordable housing, more flexibility in your ability to do that. Okay, I like that concept. I don't feel like that concept has been pitched in this development at this point for me to feel like that's why we should then make the code not relevant here.
It's not really a variance. It's more of just a different type of subdivision that is allowed as a permitted use in the zone that allows these specific things to be varied. Now, in our new subdivision ordinances for PUDs, we've spelled out more specifically the exact things that they can ask for. Under the old code, it was kind of like, you can ask for just about anything. So that's where the new code is going to be better than the old code.
And that's also why I like the new code, because I don't want to be in the position of nickel and diming all of the different pieces of a project. I feel like just keep the rules. That's all I want you to do. Keep the rules. So that's one. That's just kind of a conceptual idea. Then the next one is very specific, and it's about the parking. All of this parking is in a garage or in a driveway. I have not seen good success with that in our city, where we've required that and there is no spillover parking. Is there anything in the ownership or the documents when you choose to buy this townhome that says both of your interior garage spaces are going to be available for parking? Are we going to require that garages can be used for parking so we don't see the spillover problems we see in other developments?
It's certainly something that we can ask the developer to put into his development, or not development agreement, into his CC&Rs. There's absolutely no reason we couldn't ask for that as part of this, because it is a PUD and it does require those CC&Rs to manage the common area.
That is something I would want to add, because I think if I lived here, if I was visiting someone who lived here, I wouldn't know where to park. And I wouldn't feel like I had any options, because I wouldn't assume I should park in the driveway, and I definitely wouldn't park in someone else's driveway. So I feel like this doesn't create a good situation for guest parking at all.
Well, it's very similar to a single family dwelling where you would have a two-car garage and they would have a driveway, and you as a guest would decide to visit. You're either going to pull into who you're visiting's driveway, or you're going to park on the street if that's available. So it just functions a little bit different, but this, I think, will be much less impactful than some of the larger developments for that. But I think they could add a couple of spaces at the end of each of these roads. They just have to be very careful because they have to maintain that turnaround for fire.
Yeah, and this is not a very busy road, so there is availability for spillover, except for maybe in storm conditions. Okay, those are my questions. Thank you.
It definitely doesn't have street parking option here, though.
Not on the private street, but out on Main Street.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe the CC&Rs could say, these are private streets, so don't call the mayor and ask him to come shovel them for...
I'll pencil that
just
in.
Just a thought.
That is actually a good question, because one of the accommodations here or changes is the width of the street.
Yes.
And we have a very recent history that when we make accommodations for the width of the street, it can come back to bite the city, who then is asked to manage that design. I guess the DRC was not concerned about that in this area or in this project.
We're not really, because it is such a small project, and this is something that it's ideal for, is for these smaller infill developments. It's not really economical for us to ask them. I don't think it's advantageous to the city to say, okay, you put in a 50-foot right-of-way and dedicate a 27-foot road to us, and then we have to go plow that little road if it's dedicated to us. So in exchange for us not having to maintain it and plow it, we give them a little less asphalt that they have to maintain.
They're also not on a really steep hill.
And this is ideal, yes, because they are not on a really steep hill. This is a very flat piece of property.
Yeah. Thank you. Just a couple things about the parking. Is this fairly close to, like, the church parking that they could maybe... So they could possibly use that if it was, you know, a huge party, I guess. And the other, the question that I did have was, how, you know, I've been to some of the more heated when they've put things before the council, and has this been well received from people in the neighborhood? Because this seems pleasing to me.
Yes, so we have, under the old code, we have a requirement to send out a 14-day public comment period. We received one comment from Mr. Page, who lives on the south border, and he simply raised the issue that he wants to make sure that the city engineer is aware of a drainage problem that he's had from the property owners to the south of him that put in Twin Homes, the City Walk development, and with some water draining off, and he wanted to make sure that she was aware of that. So when the grading plan does come in with the preliminary plat, he would just like, you know, to make sure that that's addressed and that he doesn't have runoff water from both sides onto him. I'm not sure if the extent of the problem from the other property, I'm not sure if we've ever been aware of that in the past or if our city engineer has even looked at it, but I was happy to find out about it and see if we can make sure that they're doing what they need to be doing as well.
Thanks. I think I like how they've addressed the garbage cans and other things, and it looks nice that they can put two cars in their garages. That looks good to me.
And two cars in the driveway too. Actually, we had asked them to move those buildings just a little bit back because where the turns come on to the T, they were showing the minimum, which is the standard, is 18 feet. And it was 18 feet on the longest side and shorter. And so I said, you need to push this back so that each space is more than 18 feet. So on those two driveways that are on that curve, the one side is like 23 feet, and then it's 18 feet to where the curve is. So there shouldn't be any issue. If they have a bigger truck, they can park on that side of the driveway that's a little bit longer and doesn't overhang the street. And I think this is better received than it was when Romaine Court was approved, because we had a lot of neighbors come out that were really concerned about the three stories and the density on that property. This just feels a lot more comfortable and a lot more like there'll be a nice little
neighborly
development.
Yeah. Okay. I'll entertain a motion on this.
I can make a motion. I move that the City Council approve the concept plan as proposed for triplets on Main PUD at 391 North Main Street with the following conditions. Number one, an area for garbage can placement on pickup days be added adjacent to the private street. Two, snow storage areas be added to the ends of the private street and landscaped appropriately. 3, the private streets shall have no street parking and shall be permanently posted as such. And 4, the maximum amount of lawn or sod shall be limited to a maximum amount of 13,000 square feet.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion?
Yes. I would like to bring up the idea of adding as an amendment here a request or a condition that they include in their CCRs that garage interior space is intended for parking. But I also want to open that up for discussion if that's a shared idea or if that feels unnecessary.
I think it's a great suggestion. It's hard to enforce.
Yeah.
And we know that there will be storage in the garage, at least one garage side.
Yeah.
But
I don't know that I feel that is government's role to impose on the interior personal private property myself. I understand the dilemma and the concern. I think since they're exceeding by double our required parking suggestion, I like requirement. I don't feel real comfortable with that being in our purview.
Well, ultimately, we'd fall back on
the homeowners
association. Yeah,
right. To enforce.
And but we're already assuming, like, in order for them to claim that this is parking, they've already said this is what we're doing with the interior space. So the facts are already on the table. It's not us trying to come in and say this is what you have to do. They're saying this is what we're going to do.
I don't know. I don't think I have an opinion. It would be nice. I wish my garage didn't have storage in it. But I don't think we could tell people in that same thing. I don't know if we could give that as an amendment.
We definitely can tell people, especially in this type of a situation where they are telling us this is why we fit the code, is because this is what we are intending people will do. And I will say where I live and the similar situation was presented, people don't use their garages for parking, and there is not spillover parking. And one thing that is different here is that the driveways in that particular development are not long enough for cars to park in the driveway, so they can't park inside the garage. They can't park on their own driveway, so it is spilling all over in the neighborhood, which is not the same story here, but it is a problem we've seen in developments in other areas.
It certainly gives us ammunition to come if we start fielding complaints.
Yeah.
As there's not enough parking here, then we could say, well, there is if you are using it correctly.
Or if people come back and say, why did you approve this development? What are we supposed to do? Which is exactly the comments I get from the developments that I'm talking about. Why would you have said this is okay to do this?
Yeah.
Okay, so then I would like to propose that amendment that we also include the condition that I will probably need some help figuring out how to say this properly, but the condition that garage space is intended as parking space for city code requirements, to meet city code requirements. Sherry, is there a more elegant way to say that?
What I wrote down in anticipation was that require the CCRs to have a provision which requires parking in the garages and not use the garages solely for storage.
Great. That sounds a lot
Are
better.
You comfortable with that amendment?
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Okay.
Do we need to second the amendment?
Well,
she just agrees. Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay. All in favor? Let's start with Suzette.
Aye.
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 Thank you. I assume Lisa's not on. Okay. That passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item is consideration of Resolution 2024-06R, a resolution supporting the Wasatch Front Regional Council goal to work towards zero roadway fatalities and serious injuries.
So, I know that this is not necessarily the most logical bill. So let me explain. In this particular case, so what's happening is there is a program called the Safe Streets and Roads for All. And it's a system approach to how to improve the streets and do all of these things. And the Wasatch Front Regional Council is doing a study to allow us to be eligible for the funding that is part of this program. And it is a safety action plan. And one of the pieces of that safety action plan, one of the requirements, is that the local officials publicly state by resolution that we support zero fatalities and fewer serious fatalities. And that is one of the requirements to be eligible for the grant funding. So that is why we are recommending adoption of this resolution. But the program itself is really great. So I'm going to do a brief recap of that part because it's pretty interesting. So the Safe Streets program and this particular study, it's taking a change from the traditional approach to safety and looking at what they call the safe system approach. So instead of saying we need to improve how people drive, they instead say we need to design for human mistakes. And instead of saying individuals are responsible, they're saying we all share responsibility. So if we have cars, we have bicyclists, we have pedestrians, and we have whoever, all using the same kinds of public right-of-ways, how do we design it to keep everyone safe? So I'm going to do real quick. This is going to be adopted in about June. There'll be some information posted. There will be a presentation made to elected officials at the Utah League of Cities and Towns in April. And so there'll be more to come, but it's pretty interesting. So what they're doing is they're looking at the Strategic Highway Safety Plan, and they kind of go through and they say what kinds of drivers and what kinds of things, so teen drivers and older drivers, and is the accident speed related, and is it impaired, and does it have to do with not wearing seatbelts and all of these things, and they kind of get these scores. And so they have statewide total, Wasatch Front regional count or district, the Wasatch Front Regional Council service area compared to just South Davis County. They then look at the five-year historical trash trends. So this is South Davis County only. And they're looking at what causes it. And if you look in the bottom slides, they're left turns or they are wrong way driving or they are, you know, what caused the accident. And then they also talk about pedestrian, bicyclist, motorcycle, etc. I was really surprised at the number of crashes that involve bicycles being so low. And I thought that was really encouraging, actually, for a lot of reasons. But then what they're doing is they take all of these numbers and they come up with these composite risk scores. And we have these really elaborate spreadsheets that they give us and that we see. And then they take all of these scores and they put them together and they come up with a list and we have ratings. So the first are the state routes. And those state routes talk about, if you look at the different cities or the different roads, so Redwood Road here in North Salt Lake, and we have a composite score and we have all of the pieces of it. They do local roads, they do state roads, they do UDOT roads as well. And so for North Salt Lake, it's US Highway 89, Redwood Road, 1100 North, which they call 2600 South, but we've corrected that. And then they talk about some concerns about Foxborough Drive. So this is kind of the South Davis service area or this regional group. And they've identified all of these roads. We got a lot of their data sent to us as KMZ files, so we can look at it directly in Google Earth. We can click on things. We can actually see the scores and the numbers. They did the same thing for network screening for intersections. Again, it's geometry, it's behavior, it's crash data, it's all of those things. And then they map that as well, and all of these little dots. And so on the back end, as staff, we have access and we can click and we can see what kind of accidents are occurring at these locations, which is a really helpful tool. One of the tasks that we're taking very seriously that we've gotten from City Council is looking at improving pedestrian safety and how to look. And these are the tools that will be super valuable to us going forward to figure out how that goes. So the resolution is a super great thing because of all of these other pieces that are going to be really valuable to us. So we're really excited about that. Are there any questions? And you'll get the actual data in the future. This was just kind of what we're doing and how it's coming together.
So my question, well, I have a couple, but the first is I clicked into all of the different charts, but I didn't see any concrete action plans.
That's because that's what's happening right now is Wasatch Front Regional Council has a planning grant. And what's happening with the planning grant is they are doing a very specific task that fulfills all of the requirements. So we have these checklists that we have to do to be eligible. So the planning checklist and then the implementation checklist and then all of these things. And what they've done so far, I brought these because I thought somebody may ask. These are all of the specific projects and all of the things that they've identified, and there's about 15 pages here throughout South Davis County. Then from all of this, they identified three test planning areas for each municipality. So then they gave us very specific things. So for example, for 1100 North, in between just west of I-15 all the way to Redwood Road, they're saying we think we need to look at changing signalization, looking at what are we going to do at the intersection with Main Street and 1100 North, etc. So for each specific project, they're looking at all of the things that they think ought to be included in that study. And then they'll do a study and make recommendations. And so the action plan isn't going to be done until about June or July. And they're going to do sample pieces. But the action plan is for the entire Wasatch Front Regional Council area. So it's a regional safety action plan. And then the city can then apply for specific grants. And we have the ability to have input on which of our streets, which of our locations we want to have included. For example, they have US 89, not just in our city, but for a really fairly long stretch. We look at the plans, we mark the drawings, and we say, here in North Salt Lake, we would really like you to include the roundabout on Eagle Ridge as part of the US 89 safety study, because they don't function independently. And they said, that's a great suggestion, and changed the map. And then we can apply for grants for any of these kinds of projects or different projects based on the identifications that they've found.
Okay, that is very helpful. Because reading through that, I was like, and you want us to...
Right.
But that brings me to my next question. So that's a pretty large pot of money that they were showing. Mm-hmm. And that money is for the grants. Then as we look at what they study... then that large pot is the grant money that we can apply for?
Yes, and so there's $5 billion in grants. Clearly, that's not available wholly to us. but it is. We can apply for it, and they are fairly large grant dollar amounts. These are not, you know, $50,000. They're $2 or $4 or $10 million kinds of dollars. And what happens as you apply, so it may be for improvements, for example, on Redwood Road or in US 89, for example, some of the numbers that they looked at in our preliminary identified locations were medians and barriers along US 89, so people aren't turning left. And it's, you know, $1 million a mile kind of forecast budget, so very large grants.
And then my final question is, by us saying yes, are we then subject to anything in the future? What does this bind us to if we say we would love zero fatalities? Wouldn't we all? But what does that commit North Salt Lake City to?
It makes us eligible to apply for a grant that we choose to, that the council authorizes us to apply for in the future.
That's all.
It just makes us eligible. And if we miss the window of eligibility, then we miss the ability to apply for a grant.
Okay. Thanks.
So you put a map up showing some red dots. And two are clearly in our city.
There we go.
Those were... Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So the red just means there's a signal.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that's a really serious place. It just means there's a signal right there.
Okay. So we all know Wildcat Way is a problem area.
So interestingly enough, we've had this discussion ongoing. So this particular, the steering committee for the safety action plan, One of the members of the city committee is Allie Avery, our long-range planner. And then we, multiple members of every municipality in different groups, we go and we meet on these meetings. I don't know, we've had three or four of them. And so we go and we have input and talk about these things. And so what ends up happening, I completely lost my train of thought. Mayor, what was your question?
Well, I guess that we have multiple jurisdictions.
Wildcat Way. Thank you. What happened is when
Karen, do you have a question about Wildcat Way? Or?
Well, I'm just wondering if, so like, let's say we identify that as a problem area.
Yes.
We would need to joint venture with Woods Cross.
Yes.
To seek funds, is that correct?
And yeah. So many of these projects will say Bountiful, North Salt Lake, and West Bountiful. Or it may say Centerville and Farmington. So for example, 2600 South, even though it's wholly within our jurisdiction in the right-of-way, it will often say North Salt Lake and Woods Cross. For example, Wildcat Way, when we were looking at these locations, that one is absolutely one of the highest priority locations on both our list and Woods Cross's list. And it was deliberately not selected to be one of the study cases because it will be impacted by the I-15 reconstruct.
Mayor, I'm ready to make a motion.
Okay.
I move that the City Council approve Resolution 2024-06R, establishing the goal to work towards zero roadway fatalities and serious injuries.
I'll second.
Thank you. We have a motion second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Tammy.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you.
Next item is update on utility bill formatting and customer engagement portal. Heidi?
All right. This is two-part. I'm just going to show you all the mock-up that we have for the requested utility bill formatting changes that will show that tiered usage. This is a little difficult to see. I've updated it here. So there would be an upper and lower section where you can see those tiers. This is mocked up. That's why some of the things aren't lined up exactly correctly. We just received it this afternoon. But those are the actual rates. And so as usage goes into those higher level tiers, users will be able to see kind of where their spending is going and what is going and making up that water line item, as well as the irrigation line item. So overall, the billing format contains all the same information. We've actually collected feedback from the folks that work at the front counter with the customers that walk in and answer phone calls to try and include as much information just right on this front cover page, new information, and while we're doing the update to just make it more user-friendly. We're keeping the usage history charts. There was a suggestion made instead of usage to refer to it as consumption, so consumption history. On that top line to read current period water consumption calculation and maybe change that language out a little bit. So we've put in that request. The hope is that we will have this ready to go out with April's billing cycle and mail out then. So just in time for irrigation to turn on. And just wanted to give everybody a sneak peek and see if anybody had any suggestions or thoughts or any strong feelings about it or anything like that.
I'll just say this is awesome. I don't have a landline anymore, but buildings require, elevators and stuff. The phone bill couldn't be more confusing. I don't know how you could make it more confusing. And Rocky Mountain Power is pretty close second on that. So this is awesome.
Great. Thank you. I'll turn it over to John to talk about the customer portal.
Thank you.
All right. So this is part of the census meter system that we've been working on for like the past 10 years to upgrade to the newer style radios where you can read them with the towers. We actually got one of the towers is set up here on City Hall and almost all the way functional. And then our second tower, we got the tower part standing, and they're going to install the equipment in like 2 weeks. So we're really close to having everything implemented, probably like 2 months away from this is what I'm guessing, to have the meter readings start coming in on the towers. But so Vertex One is the company that Census uses for the customer portal. And the customer portal, we did a demo, what was it, 2 weeks ago, Heidi, you remember? I don't know, they fire hosed us with like a ton of information. And it just does a lot of cool stuff to really help people understand what their bill is and their usage, and gives us some other tools in there as staff that we can help alert people, notify people of things in specific areas too, because it's linked to the utility billing. So we'll kind of get into that. I tried to take some quick screenshots while we were doing this online demo so I could share it with the council. So after you log in, you get taken to this home page, and you can see what your bill is. Over here on the left, it says, who am I being compared to? It kind of shows what your usage is compared to others. Now, if that doesn't quite look right, you can go in and like change the parameters of what you're being compared to. I mean, maybe your parameters are set up for like a single person living in a home and you have like six people in your house. So of course your usage is going to look high. You change those around and it might look more normal. So that's all customizable, really easy to click and change the stuff. It has the notifications. So like if it says you might have a leak because your usage is really high, this actually has a tool that's built right in that you can do the leak diagnostics, and it has a YouTube video that shows you how to check your toilet. So that seems to be like one of the biggest things that we have for water wasters. Our guys go out and they're like, did you check your toilet? Like, oh no, my toilet can use that much water. And it's always the toilet, I swear, like 95% of the time. So it gives somebody a real hands-on tool to just, they can pull this up on their phone, it works on their phone, and they can go right through the tool right there as they're holding their phone in their hand. So, and then it has like a projected, say, this is the kind of trajectory you're on. If you keep using water at this rate, then you're going to jump into these different tiers. And we have, I gave this company like our tiered rates, and they said they can incorporate this stuff very easily. They've done it for other people. Obviously this example was built, using a tiered rate structure similar to ours. So, but ours would be in gallons, not in cubic feet, like this one says. So then it breaks down like your bill. So, you know, why is my bill so high? It says, well, you had $101 just in tier four usage, and breaks it all the way down to your sanitation use. We have like storm drain and other stuff on there that's on the utility bill, but it breaks it all down by that service. And then you can dig into it a little bit more, and it says this is how much usage you had in each one of these tiers. There was another slide, I wish I would have got it. They you can go back and get historical data for your meter. We have like 4 years, I think, stored in Cassell of meter reading data that would be available to anybody that's in the customer portal. And then their new usage, because those meters will be reading every hour, so they can see their readings come in almost real time if they have a smart meter available. So there's a lot of cool tools to kind of help people really dig into their bill, and like I said, that will give us some other tools to help notify people as well. Just another estimating slide. This is a question we get all the time now. This is this algorithms that they use to kind of determine where usage is, but people are like, well, I used all this water, where did it go? I'm like, I don't know, I can't tell you. All I can tell you is it went through the meter. I didn't tell the meter where it was going, if it was going to leak out of a tap or down the toilet, but so I mean, this kind of shows people where they're using, and a lot of the irrigation is going to be a big use on our customers. So I think that was the all. I don't know if you have any questions about that, but it's up and forthcoming, and it's going to be exciting.
I have one.
I do too. I do have a question. I think of people like my in-laws that really struggle with technology, And will there be people or somebody to help people with technology when, you know, they just want to pay their bill and maybe have some help along the way?
Yeah, there was a great help thing built into the website as well that shows you how to navigate everything in the customer portal. I didn't get any really shots of that, but we did talk about it in our demo. And then I believe the paper billing will still always be available if they prefer to do it the old-fashioned way. But, I mean, having people use this customer portal, I think, is the way we want to start pushing our customers to go.
John, could I mention one of the other benefits?
Yes.
I just wanted to mention, when we do have customers that have a leak, typically we'll find it when we get the monthly reads, and they'll have an extremely high read, or we'll notice a trend, and we recognize that, the utility billing clerk or myself, as we're looking through those reads, looking for variances. And we have reports that we run. We'll put in a service order so that Public Works can go out and check that meter and see what the problem could possibly be. So there's multiple ways that we catch it now, but not nearly soon enough. What we do as a policy is, when we do catch a leak, we try and hold the customer as harmless as possible. They still used the water, but we will give them a billing discount back 3 months, and we will reduce to that lowest tier rate. So if they use 30 or 40,000 gallons, we'll charge them at that first rate for the usage, a one-time back to 3 months, because we expect leaks to be found and caught and corrected, so long as they've corrected it. So the sooner we can catch them, that's less we're refunding, but also lets us know so we can take care of that for customers too, because that's always a great option for them.
Yeah, but awesome. With those readings coming in on the smart meters every hour, if you look at the top of this, it says you can set alerts, so you can customize parameters of when you want to be alerted. If you're out of town and you're like, well, if somebody uses 200 gallons through my meter, I want to know, and it will, you can set it up for that, and it will text and email you alerts. So that's to help kind of alleviate those surprises at the end of the month when you get your bill.
That is awesome. All right, do you have anything else? Speaking for a friend, that would have been very helpful last year.
Yeah.
But my one question is that now that we can read meters real time versus going out and manually reading, I know that last year, because of the way some holidays fell, it made a couple months longer than 31 days, and a couple months, well, the very last month, much shorter, it seemed like. So because of the fact that then it was like 34 days from read to read, mm-hmm. it pushed a lot of people, speaking for a friend, into a higher tier that then retroacted back down. Now that it's real time, will we just always be first through end of the month for every bill cycle?
I know we talked about this in the demo, and I believe that's the case, if you remember. We still don't have every single meter that will read real time. I mean, right now we have about 3,000 of about 7,500 in the ground that are capable of reading real time. We have about 700 meters in stock that will go out, that we'll be installing, and then budget for about 1,000 more meters for this upcoming budget year. So that'll push us to just over 5,000 meters in the ground. So about 75% of the system by the end of this fiscal year.
So can I address that?
Yeah.
We all remember that terrible month when we read more days than we should have. But we immediately corrected that so that we're, no matter what day the billing cycle comes on, we're reading the meters in exactly the right amount of days for now.
So we did
have that problem, but we hope to never have that problem again. It has less to do with real-time reading, and it has to do with us making sure we're reading properly on the proper date.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? Thank you, John.
Thanks.
Next item is approval of City Council minutes for February 20th. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any corrections. We'll entertain a motion.
Mayor, I'd like to move that the City Council approves meeting minutes from February 20th, 2024 as presented.
I'll second.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Those are approved. Next item is action items, action item list.
I don't have any I specifically want to comment on, but I just want to comment I really like this format and being able to, it just, I don't think work is actually getting done any faster. It just makes me feel like we're checking a lot of things off the list really fast. Maybe it is. I don't know, but it feels
efficient. I wish it was, but I think
it could be.
Right.
I don't know.
I like it. It's easy to see what's not done.
No corrections, no additions, no subtractions. Okay. Let's go to council reports. Suzette, we'll start with you.
Well, I had the pleasure of going to the second Parks Arts Rec. I'm still a little confused on the new official name, but a lot of great things happening there. Super excited for the re-signage through the trail system. I think it's going to look really good. There are some spots that are in serious need of repair, so that will be a real benefit. One of the observations that I made, just being new coming into all of this, is that when I looked at the city calendar, we have a lot of events, and some cities, like say Midway, they do Swiss Days and they do it well and they're known for it, period. And then other cities, I mean, the spectrum's big. What I was wondering is if maybe we could sit down as a council and look at all of our activities comprehensively, maybe use a few metrics, like how many people are attending, what does this cost out of the budget, what demographics are we hitting, how many years have we done this, some of those kind of things, and just as a council, go through the year's calendar and just approve or look at all of our activities. Maybe consolidate, but we can just look at it. So that would be just a recommendation based on observation.
Thank you. And speaking of calendars, I put an updated calendar in each one of your boxes the other day, so if you haven't gone to your box. Yeah. Alisa.
I don't have a lot to report, and what I do really, I think you'll probably speak to as well, but the mayor and I have continued to meet with the elementary schools in the city. So we went to Orchard first, and part of what we're doing when we do these meetings is to talk about kind of school-city partnerships and talking about the golf field trip, talking about inviting city officials to school events, inviting speech winners into city council meeting. And they've gone really, really well. I'm really glad to be able to be out in the community. So we just met with Foxborough this week, and we talked about some exciting ways to partner, in addition with one of our nonprofit partners, One Kind Act a Day, with them. That's all.
I'll just add that that was just so touching to me, that whole meeting with Foxborough. And they're still dealing with the aftermath of some events a few years ago. And this kindness initiative will be perfect for that school, and just awesome. Tammy?
Just a couple things. Next week, I will be attending the retreat with the Youth Council in Logan. My husband will go with us as well, and I'm looking forward to that, to get to know them a little bit better. That will be fun. And they told me that not to plan on sleeping, so I guess that'll be okay. And the other thing is, I got a call today from Bountiful City Handcart Days. Mayor, I understand you're already registered to be in the parade, and they would like us as a city council to be in there as well. So I'm hoping that everybody wants to do that. That's July 20th. It's a Saturday morning. And it's at 9 o'clock, and the theme is Onward and Upward. And they said we can dress up, we can walk, we can throw candy. So that's what they said.
So last year, I opted out. It became so problematic to throw candy, I opted out of it. But if you can arrange something with the U City Council and have that leadership in place, it's a good idea to throw candy. I just, yeah, or something. The idea is that they don't want anyone getting run over. I also told them that I didn't know that I would have the Ferrari or the Maserati this year for the, but I'll come up with some car for that.
She did.
We have a lot of vehicles too.
Well, she did say that the mayor would be driving or riding in a car, and if one of us was expecting or had medical issues, then we would be allowed to ride, but
they
probably
have some
walking
convertible
was
Mustangs available, but because of my connection with a certain car family,
gotcha.
I'll go that route instead. And, last year they did provide me a Maserati.
That's awesome. And
I got a lot of comments about, we're paying the mayor too much money, or, or hey, does that do 185? You know.
So you do have a car lined up?
I will, yes.
Yeah. Chief, I have a question for you. If we were to hand out golf balls, do you think that would be problematic? People, like, I don't know, throw them at each other. It's getting on the road.
The kids would be really disappointed. The dads
pick it up and
be
like,
awesome.
I'll defer that one to our city attorney, would have to defend if anything happened.
No golf balls, please.
Okay, that's
so can I go ahead and say that we'll do it?
I might be in it for another reason, so I'm not sure I'll have to have that conversation.
Okay, but maybe a few of the other.
I'll be there.
Okay. Okay, that's okay.
It's a fun event.
It really
is. So.
I'll go ahead and register us then.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We will have new shirts this year for you. Like we usually do, and name tags and everything. So,
cool.
Unless you want to be anonymous in the parade, but
no, we're not gonna be
I don't
anonymous.
Think that's what they're asking. So,
thank you.
Okay, next item is city attorney report.
Nothing, Mayor.
Thank you, Todd. I don't have a lot. Let me go through quickly. I did have a conversation with the mayors about fluoridation, and I was told that if we are, as a city, we cannot opt out if we're on Weber water. They'll be providing fluoridated water. So there was Woods Cross never did join the fluoride group. They determined that their citizens, even though it was approved countywide, their citizens rejected it, and so they never implemented it.
But they're on Weber
Water. I don't know how they says. Maybe they get it through Weber Water. They have their own wells. They're not on Weber Water.
Wait, the Weber Water is treated with fluoride?
Yeah.
But
not secondary water.
Oh, okay.
Just culinary water. Yeah.
Like, who's drinking that?
Yeah.
Stay away from wells.
Yeah. I think that's what the mayor said. So anyway. We covered that. Logan, U City Council, I haven't told them yet, but I am actually going out of town, so I'm not going to be there.
Okay.
If you can convey that to them. Elisa, were you planning on going?
No.
Okay.
It's next
Friday.
We leave on Thursday, so it's Friday night that they were asking if you could go to dinner.
Actually, I can.
You can?
I originally said no because I was going to go see Adele in Las Vegas, but she's canceled her concerts for a month because she's sick. So my concert got canceled.
So now you can go to dinner with us. Oh, awesome.
I can come
and your
over
husband
and
too?
Sing for you.
No.
If you know.
Just you?
It'll be just me.
Perfect.
Okay.
I have a daughter to play that night too. But
okay.
I was already planning on missing that.
But you'll come. Okay.
Last night was caucus meetings. I saw you there. And I didn't seek out any thing there, but I am a county delegate and an alternate to the state convention. I've done both of them before, so happy to serve again there. After I left the Foxborough meeting, with Elisa. I stopped into Liberty Safes of North Salt Lake. Mm-hmm. And mostly just to say, there's so many cities, or so many businesses in our city that say, you know, come to blank blank in Bountiful, you know, because I think it's more descriptive of where. But Liberty Safes of North Salt Lake, they just say that on all their ads. And so I stopped in just to say, hey, I appreciate that you say you're in North Salt Lake. And we have a lot of events during the year if you want to get more involved in our community. And the manager was named Franson, and he's from Panguitch. So I left a message for David, but I guess he's gone. But I said, if I ran into one of your long-lost relatives, that you may want to reach out to. And the other thing I had, just to let you know, I'm gone out of town next week, and will hopefully be out of cell range and not available at all. So. Yeah. Ken, city manager report.
So, unless Wendy hands me a note about something I've forgotten, I don't believe I have anything tonight. Do I? No, I don't. You know, gotta ask the boss over here. No, we've been ticking off a bunch of meetings, and I just don't think we have anything. Okay. It feels like I'm on vacation since the legislative session is over. So,
how's your overall? Did we survive?
I think there's some wins and there's some losses. So, overall, I think some of the things we were concerned with the most have been changed, so that at least temporarily. I think we will continue to have to be vigilant about gravel pits. There's some very influential people who are working as many angles as you can dream up to expand gravel pits and I really think, and this is surprising, but I really think there are some at the table who just have no regard at all for the local impacts of gravel pits, which is sad to see, and I'm really disappointed that we have at least part of the other side of the argument really doesn't care that the public endures a lot of nuisance all up and down the Wasatch Front. So that's disappointing. But I do think we had a win on the building inspection bill, which I think turned out to be not very harmful to anybody. And we have some very creative housing bills. And I think I think in the future we'll do a presentation on one of the zoning concepts that got approved, which is a kind of a creative way to participate in affordable housing. Our city is in the fortunate position of having some housing funds that have been generated from the redevelopment agency. And so we'll need to put some thought into how we use those funds. But the state did adopt some creative zoning and housing laws this year that we'll have to look at. So, no baseball stadium in North Salt Lake, though. Too bad.
But no, close, maybe. You know, I remember when Mitt Romney took over the Olympics in 2002, he was, you know, kind of, I think he was familiar with Utah, like he'd fly in and go to Deer Valley. That was his experience of Utah. But one of the comments he made is, you know, everyone has gravel pits, but in Utah we seem to put them in our cities. Why? You know?
Yeah, it's amazing. But,
yeah. Well, let's adjourn, and we'll go into a closed session. So.
Yes, and we need to do that by motion,
yeah.
And the purpose, and state the purpose of the closed session, which I can tell you will be... to discuss the purchase, exchange, sale, or lease of real property.
Okay, let's give Lisa or Wendy a moment to.
No, I think you leave this meeting by going into closed session.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion to go into closed session.
I'll second.
No, I need a motion.
Oh, you, so. I'll first. Can you find it? Or do we just?
It's right here. Place?
Just a motion to go into. Thank you.
The yellow part.
The yellow. I'm gonna do it.
I make a motion to go into a closed session for the purpose of discussing the purchase, exchange, sale, or lease of real property. Ken Latham will present the proposals and explain the approval process. Am I supposed to say that?
That's okay. You can say that. It's true.
I'll second all of that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Let's do a roll call.
Aye.
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 Okay, thank you. We're adjourned and in a closed session.
I know.
I did.
Just following directions.
You're doing great.